Before we get into today's episode of One Shining Podcast, we want to do a quick programming note here. In case you missed it, we will be reacting to each round, myself and Kyle Mann. So round one just wrapped up Thursday, Friday. Now we're talking about the Thursday and Friday games. We will be back on Sunday night reacting to the round two games. And then also on Tuesdays, we will have special episodes coming out on OSP with some special guests that are involved at the highest level in college basketball. Fingers crossed, we're trying to line up some good guests. And then back at it, we'll be doing reaction shows after each round. Myself and Kyle Mann. Tune in. It is One Shining Podcast. It's the best time of the year. If you want to hear people breaking down college basketball, this is the place to be. Come join us here at OSP.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles. Because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit jiffylube.com.
On today's episode of One Shining Podcast, we are reacting to the first round of the NCAA tournament, myself and Kyle Mann. It is a late night here on the West Coast and even later night for everybody on the East Coast. So Kyle Mann and myself are going to do our best to break down everything we saw. We're going to talk about the heroes of the tournament. We're going to talk about the zeros of the tournament, some villains. We'll talk about, is the SEC overrated? We'll talk about Coach Cal's future. We'll talk about the Samford block that was a block, but called a foul, all these types of things. Also, we'll talk about Will Wade's early exit. We'll talk about Dusty May and where he stands right now. We just got a lot to get to because it is the first round of the NCAA tournament. My voice is a little bit worn out because we have been in Vegas with Cousin Sal. We've been doing the Race to Tens. Myself and Kyle were there. We were having a great time. So appreciate everybody tuning into that. It's the best time of year. Kyle, anything else before we get into today's episode?
There's nothing like round one in Vegas. There's also nothing like the shower pressure in the Flamingo where we stayed. But I cannot wait to do this like God intended tomorrow on the couch. But we got to get through this first. So first,
Woody Durham.
He takes the timeout. They're out of timeout. Technical foul. Technical foul.
Welcome back to One Shining Podcast. It is Friday night. It is past midnight on the East Coast right now for Kyle Mann. And we are here to break down the first round of the NCAA tournament. We are just our minds have been boggled by basketball. We have had so much basketball wash over us these first 2 days. My voice is a little worn out. I know Kyle Mann has been putting in the work. I know he's worn out.
Yeah, you've been down there yelling with the gamblers, Tate. I had this moment where I was like, where's Tate? What's going on? Kyle, were you a frolic? I don't know what was happening, but I couldn't find Tate. And I like get on social media and I see Tate and Cousin Sal with their iPads. You had on a nice Nike windbreaker I liked. That was a cool little ensemble. You're always on top of that stuff. But I see you're with the gamblers, so no wonder you don't have a voice because you've been screaming, but there's been a lot to scream about, right?
Yeah, I've been chanting race to 10 and hands up and defense and all these things amongst a bunch of degenerates in Las Vegas. So shout out to Cousin Sal for making that possible. But yeah, it's been a great start to the NCAA tournament. We're going to try to cover and talk about as much as we can. Like I said, this is going to be our version of whip around coverage, the OSP whip around. There's been a lot of talk about what's happening in this tournament, but I want to start with one of the conferences that you and I think is, you know, I argue one of the best conferences talent-wise. The SEC, there is a lot of hubbub out there. Going into the tournament, Greg Sankey said, We talk about, you know, heroes and villains in college basketball. Greg Sankey's had the most villainous take of all time, which is basically we need more power conference teams in the tournament. Get rid of the teams that are coming in, the classic Cinderellas. And then the SEC struggles in the first round. Auburn goes down. Kentucky goes down. We're going to get to that a little bit. But in general, the SEC is taking hits. Greg Sankey is the face of the situation. What are your thoughts right now on the Greg Sankey situation? Should he put out a statement and just say, I apologize to the fans of March Madness and college basketball? Like, what's going on here?
He's serving his interests, right? He's sort of like working for a super PAC or a lobby. He's a lobbyist. Right? I don't know.
He's a lobbyist.
I don't blame him for being like, hey, let's bump these other conferences up. I think for him, he sees a new axis, you know, not to reference something sinister, but maybe this will go sinister in some ways. But he wants to close the country club gates, man. He doesn't want the caddies from Caddyshack coming in and getting in the pool and messing everything up. He wants the big boys, all big boy competition. But that it's inherently stupid. I mean, anybody that watches the NCAA tournament knows that that is what makes it great. I mean, like, the NCAA tournament is about great matchups. You think about we reference it a lot, the 2022 Duke Carolina game, or just great title games, or just Titans sort of like throwing haymakers at each other and big performances and things. But the David Goliath stuff, agree or disagree with this? I mean, I think it's more important. I think that is the core thesis of this, is that, and I think that's something I've always loved about the state tournament in Kentucky, is that we still have a wide open state tournament. And that's always been a part of our history. And that makes it great. Like, a good example of that is my high school, which is very, very small, played the number one team in the state the other night. And we have like a run and gun slinging kind of guerrilla offense. And we're taking on this kid who's like a 4-star, 7-foot center. And we gave him a game and it was thrilling as hell. I think you got to preserve that stuff, man. So like on the college scale, I don't blame him for protecting his own interests, but I don't know. I don't really want. Is the end game that we're going to have like a high major team with sort of a shitty record in there too? Is that we just want to keep letting these teams that don't deserve it get in? I don't think we should do that.
Yeah, I don't want to see UConn play 16 seed Oklahoma. I really don't want to see that. I just don't think that's going to draw in the eyeballs. And you mentioned it, the David versus the Goliath. Last year, we saw the perfect example of that. The smallest team in the tournament, FDU, takes down the tallest man in college basketball, the National Player of the Year in Zach Edey. And this tournament, we got plenty of Davids, plenty of heroes to latch onto. And I think the face of that, and we'll start now in this conversation, and I want to apologize before we get into it, but let's start with Jack Golke. He is the man who has become the face of the Davids of this year. People have compared him to Doug Eddard. Obviously, you know, he had a great run there with St. Peter's a couple years ago. But Jack Golke hits 10 threes. He does not take any shots inside the three-point line. John Calipari has become the person that we are pointing the finger to. We'll get to Coach Cal in a second. But first, I want to start with Jack Golke. This guy is a D2 player once upon a time. Is an old man, and he has a game of a lifetime. And now he has a name that we are going to recognize for a long time when it comes to March Madness. So how incredible of a performance, taking away the Kentucky side of it, was Jack Golke in this game?
Literally an accountant, right? I mean, he mentioned that he's going to finish his accounting stuff, like, and that
right. TurboTax already signed him to an NIL deal.
Is that true? I didn't see that.
Yes, they already got him.
He's smart, jumping. Well, he's good with money. We already know that,
right?
Yeah, I mean, he has the game of a lifetime. The vibes were pretty bad early on. I mean, I think I can speak for most Kentucky fans when I say that. In this game, I mean, you know, Oakland 13 off-screen plays at 1.3 points per possession. They were doing one thing throughout the game. You know, Kentucky just couldn't quite, you know, there were a lot of sort of unfortunately that's game, unfortunately we're screwed kind of moments. Justin Edwards misses a two, but he gets stuffed by the rim at the worst time. That was a bad omen. Misses another layup. Reed Shepard has just kind of an uncharacteristically weird first deer in headlights game we got from him. I felt like, you know, it seemed like he just kept rising to the moment, and it was just like, man, this kid is just, his nerves are, or he just has adamantium nerves. I know that's not possible, comic book fans. Don't at me on that. But like, he didn't have a great game. And then you started to see that we talked about Dark Rob. I thought Rob, when he started to feel the pressure, made some big plays, made some bad plays. The bigs couldn't play in this game. Greg Campy all week long challenging the bigs, saying they can't, they don't score, blah, 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 blah. A normal Kentucky team, and we can talk more about this, about Cal's legacy and thing like things like that. A normal Kentucky team, you remember, I think it was like Darius, was it Darius Morris for Wichita State back in 2017, talked shit to Bam, Shaq Morris. Darius Morris played for Michigan back in the 2000s. Talk shit to him. Bam comes out there and just like cracks some skulls, you know, things like that. It's just kind of weird, the sort of like on their heels in the sort of like fetal position posture this team had. But, you know, giving credit to Golkey, he just kind of ran these. He kind of was run. I was talking about this on Twitter. He ran kind of the same patterns all night. You know, they were, somebody on the broadcast mentioned Jimmer. They were sort of Jimmery, like, he's just beelining to the ball. He wasn't doing anything crazy like quick step backs or anything like that. It was all kind of these big arcs, and the little Kentucky guards just couldn't get through screens. He kept getting wide open shots. But he also, I want to give him a lot of credit, he also made some insane shots. So credit to Oakland. They had a great game plan. I don't know, man. It's, I felt subdued after it. Like, I wasn't angry. I wasn't like lashing out. And that was a weird feeling for me. So that was an indicator to me that like things got to change.
And at the end of the day, it's a testament to the fact that, you know, Golkey and Greg Campy are the representatives of what we just talked about. I mean, they are the ultimate Davids. They are the ultimate like underdogs. And when you're naturally, you know, we have a proclivity to pull for the underdogs, and you have those two guys, Greg Campy, the longest tenured coach in college basketball, kind of gets his moment in the sun here. He had said before the game, he thought there was a chance they could win this game. You know, his premonition comes true. So it's all this great storyline. We love narratives here, especially when it comes to March Madness. So Golkey, Greg Campy, those guys go down as heroes, you know, during the first round of the tournament. Now we look at the zeros on the other side of that. I mean, you mentioned Reed Shepard. He was a guy that, you know, KOC puts him up, you know, going to go number one potentially to the Spurs to play with Wembanyama. That's probably not what he forecasted when he looked at his, you know, his type of season this year. You got Rob Dillingham, who I was begging him this entire game not to put too much on Rob, but you talked about Dark Rob. He wasn't in a defensive stance for about half of the possessions. I mean, yeah. I don't know what was going on with that as well. There was a lot of things that they did. I mean, you know, at one point, Reed Shepard was kind of face guarding Golkey, but Golkey was back towards half court. So he basically was creating this space there at the top of the key for them to kind of create for others, you know, Trey Townsend, one of those guys. So there was a lot of moments, not trying to steer guys into the help defense, you know what I mean? And guys are spinning baseline and getting wide open layups. There was just so many little things in this game that were the little moments kind of built up to this ultimate upset. And that was the frustrating part just from the Kentucky side, I'm sure.
Oh, man. Did you just suggest that this Kentucky team guide the player towards the help defense? You just suggested that. Oh my God. That's the funniest thing I've heard in a while, Tate, that this team would do that. No, I said this team had a terminal illness, man. I mean, it was going to get them at some point. I didn't think it'd be the first game. I really didn't. And I want to give credit too, to like, they made some big shots, not just Golkey. I mean, like Rocket Watts, a name from the, name from the past. High school ball at Spire Academy with LaMelo Ball, one of the most unwatchable high school teams ever with Isaiah Jackson. He made some big ones. And the fact that they couldn't single cover Trey Towns and Rocket Watts was killer. You know, Watts only had 8 points, but, you know, Townsend had 17, 4 assists, 12 rebounds. He had a great game. They looked like the aggressor the whole game. And you could kind of get this sense that, like, there's this, we talked about like UConn sort of inevitability, you know, when you were watching them today, which maybe we'll get to that, but they just had this, they had this vibe of like, we're going to do what we do, like try to stop us. And you could kind of tell that Kentucky throughout this game was like, oh shit, we got to do something. That was the energy that was in the air. And as the time just kind of got lower and lower, it just became clear that it wasn't going to happen. And I don't know, man, it leaves a lot of broader questions to be answered, but it's tough. It's tough. It's tough because this is, they haven't won a tournament game in a long time. Like, they haven't gone past the first weekend in a long time. Haven't won an SEC tournament game in a long time. And, I feel bad for our fans, man. It's very just quiet, like here, like I was saying. It's sad.
And the pandemic, you know, not to put blame on that, but I feel like that stretch of time felt longer than just the 1 year that we had off from the tournament. So anything pre-pandemic just feels like eons ago. It feels like a lifetime ago. So when you go back and you say the last time we've done this is 2017 or 2018, 2019, whatever, it does feel a little bit longer. And I can understand the frustration. You mentioned the broader questions. That's the last thing I want to hit here. Broader question, the Calipari era, like, you know what I mean? I saw Seth Greenberg talking about we need to get rid of Swaggy Kyle. We need to go back to the original Coach Calipari where he's leaning into tough defenses and things like that. I mean, is there a pivot here to be made? Is there an image makeover for Cal, or is this like the road is running out for his lifetime contract at Kentucky?
Well, you know, you have to kind of separate this into the buckets of what you want to do and what's possible. And then the third bucket is God from a box that's going to come and just sort of change the plot. So basically, Kentucky fans, I think, almost unanimously want this to end. I tweeted last night. I kind of had it in my drafts because I thought they were going to lose for a long time. And I just like kept it there. Moment the game was over, I tweeted it. I told you after they lost to Gonzaga, I had somebody clap at me and be like, oh, well, how embarrassing to lose to Gonzaga. I'm not saying it's not an insult on Gonzaga. It's that they lost four in a row at home. When they lost that one, I was like, okay, I think this is over. Whatever happens, he's got to move on. I just don't know how they could. So it's going to come. And the crazy thing, you know, the $33 million buyout that I heard you mention to Bill on his show, is tough because he has four more seasons until his contract kicks in and he gets this $1 million a year thing to be an ambassador. Incredible leverage play by his agent back in 2016 right. to do this because UCLA flirted with him and batted their eyelashes. And, you know, so it's quite a deal. They're just going to need somebody to kind of swoop in and want him. But the problem is, man, he's put together some of the worst seasons we've had in a long, long time. So you're going to have to find somebody who's desperate, I think, whether or not that's Michigan. I talked to you. Do you think Michigan wants Cal? I mean, I just ask you as an objective bystander here.
I think that Michigan likes the idea of they're going to win the headlines if they hired Cal. You know what I mean? Like, it would be a good headline hire. You win the press clippings. Everybody gets excited. But I don't think it would be a move where both sides are happy in the end. And I feel like Calipari would be setting himself. I mean, if he took a job like Michigan, I think that would be the writing on the wall that Kentucky was trying to figure out a way to finesse out of this deal. He feels ultimately unwanted and basically just wants to get out of there. And it is good that if he does get another offer to go somewhere, there is no buyout. So, I mean, as far as the market itself, there are schools and there are places that I think could talk themselves into a John Calipari swan song. You know what I mean? Like, especially, I mean, you mentioned UCLA. I mean, I've thrown that out before. I mean, UCLA is a place that kind of fits the calling card of what Calipari, if he wants to be Swaggy Cal, he could go do that, you know, out of UCLA if Mick Cronin wanted to go somewhere else. So I think the Calipari thing is going to be very fascinating. I do think that one saving grace could be, and we were talking about this with Reed Sheppard, but if Reed Sheppard goes back and says, this year, I looks like I'm falling down where I'm like late lottery, maybe it's best I come back. I have a year where I'm the guy. I'm the starting point guard. I'm not doing this weird DJ Wagner, you start, but I come in and play the most minutes. And it's my Kentucky team, and I get to be the man, and I get to show people who I am as a player. Now you can sell me into the idea of Calipari coming back and setting that up, because I think that there is a nice connective tissue between the Sheppard family and Calipari and Reed Sheppard. So that would be like the spin zone positive, you know, and they got a nice class coming in as well. But it does feel like, just the fans, Big Blue Nation, right? Whatever that whole entity is, they just feel fed up. And I understand the frustration, because when you're Big Blue Nation, you expect a certain standard, and the standard hasn't been met. And Cal went back to his old, hey, these are just young kids. And I just don't think those lines are going to work anymore. And Reed Sheppard could be a saving grace. I mean, if I was him, I'd be recruiting Reed Sheppard back like it was, like my life was on the line, right? I mean, that's really the big thing.
Yeah, this offseason is going to be horrible, man. I just don't see how it could continue, because he's, like I said, he's alienated every relationship at the school. It's been pretty well talked about. You could go into the broader things about like his time here. I personally think that he pivoted from, it's funny that Seth is good friends with Cal. He always defends him. You can just kind of count on that. whatever, you know, Tate, if you were a coach, I would defend you, but like, because I know you'd be a failure. But no, I just think, so I was talking with somebody, they were just like, well, what can Michigan offer him? You know, that he, you know, Kentucky's, I think he just, it's a vibe reset. I think the thing that has kind of changed, talking about Cal's energy, the kind of, the thing that has changed at UK has been the burden of expectation. I think that, like, he doesn't have the same kind of energy he had when he was climbing, when he was swaggy, when he was, his teams played loose and played hard, and they had this, like, we're going to come F you up. Like, now his teams have this, like, weight of the world on them where he's, you know, climbing is just not the same as being at the top, and people respond differently to that. And I think Cal's energy lately has just been different. I think it's been desperate. Personally, I don't think I've ever said this anywhere, but I think the move to bring, I'm sure Antigua was a great guy, I've never met him. I think the move, moving the heavens and earth to get Antigua and bringing in Chin Coleman, who I think has been a disaster as a Kentucky assistant, and I think he deserves more blame than he gets. I think that was a sign of desperation. And I think it was the sign that, you know, and then you get the COVID era and the transfer, all these things just compounded where he reacts way too late stylistically to things. They got to move on. They got, and I could see why for Michigan, it would be attractive. They're going to be able to get that talent in. That's going to be fun. Maybe Cal will be more loose in another setting, but I think they got to figure out to make it a way to make it happen.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. But I think Cal at least would get a new fan base that would be energized by his messaging, not worn out by his messaging. And I think that's really what it is. Like, they've heard every single song that he can sing. And now when he's trying to go back to the hits and play the hits, everyone's rolling their eyes. They're like, we're over it. We don't want to hear this song anymore. We've heard you play it. Give us some new stuff. And that's where Calipari is at this point. And I think, you know, it'll be an interesting situation. Like you said, let's do some games that shocked us, some games that bamboozled us. You texted me about this as we kind of go through, you know, the teams that hoodwinked us in the first round. I'll start. Duquesne. Duquesne, I had a late feeling, a gut feeling when we were in Vegas. I pulled Kyle to the side and I said, we're going to go put in a bet on Duquesne. I just feel like the Dukes have some sort of momentum going on with Keith Dambrot's last dance. They got a good favorable matchup with BYU. BYU is supposed to be a 5 seed. They pushed down to the 6 seed. Duquesne, most people thought BCU was supposed to be that 11 seed, but the Dukes looked the part. They absolutely just beat up BYU early in this game. I mean, literally physically beat them up, and BYU had no answer from there. Jackson Robinson tried his best in the second half, but how impressed were you by the Duquesne Dukes, and how shocked were you that BYU was out after the first round?
I feel bamboozled. You know, the thing that made me think of that was that commercials are a big thing. I'm going to go crazy if I hear that Wendy's. Like, if I hear that one more time, I'm going to, you know, lay down on a campfire after I soak myself in gas. So that's going to happen. There's some parallels, I think, between BYU and Duquesne, and then the James Madison, Wisconsin thing. You know, you got the deliberate, like, sort of two paces, like, and I just feel like the punching in the mouth, the physicality, the getting to every loose ball seemed to throw BYU off in a way that was similar to what happened in Wisconsin. You kind of see that, like, kind of wide look in their eyes. But Duquesne, I think, just looked like the more physically talented team throughout. And I was kicking myself because on this very show, Tate, we had talked about the hilarious variance of BYU, you know, on the year, you mm-hmm. know, offensive rating 96th percentile. They get a lot out of their bench on the season. They just were a team. They attempt the most threes. I think they're number one in the country in attempts, aren't they? 32 per game, which is, you know, insane. Maybe Golkey should have gone to play there. He would have, you know, maybe set the scoring record. But they just looked like they were overmatched and they couldn't create open shots. And then you were right. Jackson tried to bring him back, but he was the only guy who didn't seem daunted to me on the floor.
I was a big fan of Duquesne in the first round. I felt like they got a lot. And LeBron obviously has hopped on that bandwagon. He sent him all shoes and he has been fully in, so much so that people were wondering, is Bronny James going to enter his name in the transfer portal and play for Drew Joyce next year? We'll see what happens with that. Another bamboozlement. We have to talk about this. The Yale storyline here. John Pulakidas. If you did not know the name before, you know it now. Danny Wolf was the name that we did know and that we were a fan of. Danny Wolf had the mask on for a little while. He took the mask off. It was quite a journey. But this Yale team, they get Auburn off balance. They make Auburn play a possession game that they do not want to play. Jani Broom down the stretch was not great. And Yale gets a huge win. And you talk about being bamboozled. I think a lot of people were shocked to see the Ivy League win again.
And maybe we shouldn't be. You know, we talked a lot about how we wanted to see Xavion Lee in this game, and we get Pulukaitis. I think this all kind of comes down to, I just want to say again, I love Clark Kellogg and Charles Barkley's dynamics. It's just hilarious. In year one, I legitimately think
passive aggressive. Yeah,
Clark would get legitimately annoyed by him, and now it's to the point where Clark is just like, okay, like you can tell he's like, all right, guys, I know you haven't like watched it all. Kenny Smith, I know, is your guy, Tate, but like his commentary on Moorhead like had me like almost in tears. Because I think once you do this for a while, you can kind of agree or disagree. You can kind of get a little bit of a feel for when people are sort of like connecting the dots and getting by. And I thought it was like an all-time effort from him. But they were talking about Auburn and somebody. Somebody made the comment, I guess, said something about like that Auburn had been playing great, and Clark was just like, that's an exaggeration. But this game like was at 7:30. Just talking about the randomness of the tournament, man. Bez Mbang hits a pull up three that rattles in, like a loud rattle in make. And he is like a 19% shooter, like off the bounce from three on the season. So if you're Auburn, you got to be thinking you got to be fucking killing me. And then it just sort of like snowballs from there. I mean, you were telling me you thought that Broom in particular, where if you had to kind of diagnose what fell apart for them, what would you say it was?
I just feel like the moment got to him a little bit, and the only guy that they could turn to was the one guy you don't want to turn to, which is KD Johnson, and give him credit. I mean, KD did make a nice layup and one late in that game, kind of gave him a little bit of a boost, a little bit of confidence where game wasn't over quite yet. It was a 4-point game. He gets a 3-point play, but doesn't make the free throw, in the most KD Johnson kind of way. But down the stretch, Jani Broom is their best player. You were hoping that Jani Broom would have some sort of game-changing play to help you out. He had a really bad no-call on Danny Wolf that you sent me the screenshot of that. I mean, that was just its own separate storyline that would have been controversial had Yale not won this game. It's a testament to the Ivy League. They've been great. They've especially been great in the tournament. It reminded me of the Torian Prince Baylor game a little bit, where it's like you look at both these teams and you say, I'll take them. I'll take Auburn. I think there's no way they don't win this game. Same way with Baylor that year. But Yale just executes, and it was a slow burn. It was a slow death for Auburn. And I think in real time, Bruce Pearl's wheels were spinning. And now you got people talking about Bruce Pearl's record in March. Was 2019 a fluke to the Final Four? You know what I mean? Like, this is just what happens with the brash overreactions, which goes back to the SEC kind of talk. I mean, Bruce Pearl, John Calipari have kind of become the face of those conversations and about tournament success. And I think that's been a huge storyline. So, Bruce Pearl, I feel for him a little bit. But, you know, when we do heroes and villains, I think Bruce Pearl is going to go into the villains category a little bit, because he talked about one of his guys getting hit in the throat who got thrown out of the game. We watched the tape. I'm not sure that he took a throat shot as it was, you know, portrayed, which kind of goes back to the character that counts. This is what Bruce Pearl does. He likes to tell his own version of stories, which we appreciate. But, the other crazy part about this game is Nate Oates, after the game, goes to Yale's locker room to congratulate them, which is also a very villain move. So not many times you have like two coaches on opposite ends creating villainy together. So a lot of Alabama up there in Spokane, Washington.
Didn't Lane Kiffin tweet something too? I thought I saw.
Yes. Yes, he tweeted at the Jungle, which is obviously like the fan base of Auburn. Like, good luck today, guys. This is after they lost, a very Lane Kiffin kind of troll. So just a lot of that.
Great.
Good for the smart guys.
Well, I don't want to deprive Trey Donaldson of credit for blame either. Everybody pooped their pants at the end of this game, man. It was just sort of like a cumulative pants pooping. At one point there were four turnovers. What's crazy is Yale missed four threes in a row, and Auburn could have like tightened the clamps on them, and they just didn't do it. I mean, they were just mindless turnovers. Trey Donaldson had a weird bounce pass out of bounds. But then I want to say that like Pulukaitis made one of the nasty, Cantwell, he got a switch with Cantwell on the baseline, and it was well contested, well defended, nasty high arcing step back, drills it. He just, you could see he just had that look like, I always called Shark Eyes, man. He had that just kind of singular focus of like, we're going to get this done. And Auburn just didn't have that. Like they looked afraid. And like you were saying, I think there's a sort of an interesting sort of like dichotomy between the way that like Duquesne and James Madison blitz these execution teams. And you talked about Yale as a team that executes and does their thing. Auburn's had that reputation all year. And they just, when it came down to it, they couldn't create those turnovers. And they couldn't sort of impose their will on the pace of the game, because that's all it comes down to, man. If you don't want to play the pace they're doing, turn them over, get them going the other way. And Auburn couldn't do it at the end of the game. And it was tough. You know, Broom had another big turnover off of a post up. So I think people are absolutely right to kind of call pearls, because that semifinal really is, it kind of sticks out. They've got a lot of, you know, they didn't go to the tournament the first 3 years. I guess that was show cause, though, wasn't it? When the first,
yeah, right. Yeah, it was a decision, so, right?
So, anyway, so
that's what happens when you're dealing with bad guys.
I think people are right to question.
Yeah, yeah, right. It's a fair question to ask at this point. I did want to shout out also the Idaho band was wearing Yale shirts. It was not the Yale band. They were not able to pay for their band to go out to Spokane, Washington. So they got the Idaho band to put on Yale shirts. I thought that was a nice little touch there. So Yale got a lot of love in Spokane, Washington. We'd love to see that. So there's some heroes there. Let's talk about some zeros, because one of the guys that everybody fell in love with last year during his Final Four run, obviously Dusty May. Dusty May gets a first round matchup with Northwestern. Dusty May has some questionable late game decisions that we've seen throughout the season. Dusty May is the hottest name in college basketball. Every job is open. His name is the first one that is kind of shot up to the top. What are our thoughts and what are our reactions to Dusty May? They lose this game to Northwestern, and I'm putting him on the zeros board because right now Dusty May, the stock might be dropping a little bit, even though it sounds like he's talking to Louisville.
Yeah, he's talking to Louisville from everything that I've heard. I just think I've come away thinking about how fickle and how much your life can change. You know, we talked about Indiana State and sort of like how much the exposure I think would have done for them if they'd gotten some of those tournament optics, even if they'd had a good game. The lives of the people around that coaching staff, like, and the same thing has kind of gone the total opposite way for Dusty May. You know, if you think about if we could have Chris Vernon coming on here and complain about this, but like, and Penny, I'm sure it was, Penny was probably laughing his ass off. Do you think he was laughing his ass off at FAU going down in that game? He had
100%. Yes, yes. Probably, yeah, praying so, at the same time. Yeah, he's praying on their downfall.
Wearing that sweet Pete Sampras pullover thing he had on. Anyway, no, I mean, they barely beat Memphis on a play of super questionable call. We all saw it. And then they get FDU instead of Purdue. And that's a crazy stroke of good fortune. They do go on and earn that Final Four, but if you just kind of think about how differently we would talk about this, this year they had some good wins. They had some bad losses too. You know, they beat
Arizona was the big win, right?
That was a great win. Yeah, and legitimate too. But you kind of saw at the end of the year the things that worked for them last year is all those shot creators, and they had a bunch of them, and they had a spread it out offense. Those guys made plays last year, and you could kind of see this time around the moment came around and they tried to seize it. And, you know, sometimes you go aggressively at the moment and you whiff and you when you whiff, you risk a lot and you lose. You know, the stakes are just like that. So you could kind of see them pressing a little bit. They made some sort of weird decisions, but, you know, Northwestern made some big plays. I think did they outscore them like 12-0 in the overtime? I'm trying to remember if FAU even scored in overtime.
Yeah, I mean, my memory, and this might be the Mandela effect, my memory is basically it was over. Like, as soon as the overtime started, there was a play where Raftery was like, he needs to kick it out, Northwestern. And then, you know, he did kick it out to Langborg. Langborg hits a three, and Ian Eagle's like, he does kick it out, and he hits it, you know? And then Langborg is like, insane. Oh, yeah. That was the moment where I was like, okay, that, unfortunately, that's game for everybody on the FAU side. But also, Ryan Langborg, 25-plus points on two different Division I teams. That hasn't happened since, you know, the 90s. I think it's only happened twice in history. So Ryan Langborg is a March Madness superstar. He's one of the heroes for sure. And in this game, you thought it was going to be Dusty May. You thought it was going to be FAU. John L. Davis was the real zero, though, I thought, bringing that ball up the court so nonchalantly on that
but
last
that's him,
possession.
Though. That's him, though. That's his gift and his curse. Rob has a little bit of that, too. That's what I'm saying. Those guys are great to have. but sometimes you want them to be like, hey man, like realize the moment here. And I think that's, I don't know. I thought Golden, I will admit that I was totally doing like the European like stereotype thing where I feel, but I do think that this has kind of become an epidemic in college hoops of the like, the plays going the other way and doing the soccer move of like, oh, you know, like the knee, I've been killed. Mm-hmm. A little bit of that. And it turns out he did get hit really hard in the orbital bone. So I feel bad for him. I think he got hit in the exact same spot a little bit later. But FAU goes down. I don't know. You think anybody fouls Dusty? Or I'm trying to remember if these guys even have eligibility. It makes you wonder who. Is Michigan or Louisville the more attractive job if you're Dusty May? I think that's a big first kind of question. If Michigan even wants him.
Yeah, I think that if I was Dusty May, I would be fact-finding. Obviously, Ohio State was in that conversation until they decided to go with Jake Diebler, which I think was a move for the fan base. Everybody was excited about Jake Diebler. I don't hate the move. I think Jake Diebler's a good coach, showed some good things, played Scotty Middleton, which is, you know, a guy that you and I were hoping that they would play earlier. So he did some right stuff. So, that took out of that conversation. So I think Dusty May was down to two schools. I think it was Ohio State and Louisville. If Michigan wanted to entertain Dusty May, I think that would have happened if he had a nice little run here, but I think he might be not one of their top wish list guys. It's kind of funny, like Michigan probably, if they looked at it 2 weeks ago, they're like, Dusty May, John Calipari, I mean, look at us, like who would have thought we have these guys? And then all it takes is one, you know, first round upset for the taste to be a little bit different. So I think Dusty May is a fascinating phenomenon, and it's also one of those things where now you have the little bit, we could poke a little bit of a hole in the Dusty May run. But after this, now everybody's going to poke holes and they're going to try to find out, what their big issue is. So I think that lends itself to an interesting conversation for the Dusty May fanboys out there. I mean, Indiana might be good for them. They may have dodged a bullet. So who knows? Say goodbye to busted brackets because FanDuel lets you bet on every game of the tournament. Whether you're betting on a big upset or a one seed, it's time to go dancing on America's number one sports book. Right now, new customers get $200 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. Let me just tell you, I got some Final Four futures out there. One of them was with UConn, and I feel really good about that. If you go to FanDuel Sportsbook right now, you can use your $200 on point spreads, money lines, and you can even pick who's going to win it all. And the wait is over. North Carolina, my home state, FanDuel is officially live in the Tar Heel State. Just visit FanDuel.com/OSP and bet on college hoops until they cut down the nets. Must be 21 or older in present and select states. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit theringer.com/RG. First online real money wager only, $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com. This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on cars.com.
Let's talk about some of the best teams. Like you were texting me about this, like the teams that are most legit, you know, too legit. They can't quit because they're going to go win the national championship. I think UConn, they blow out Stetson. There was a great Bill Murray cutaway where it's like 47-12. And Bill Murray just looks like he's zonked staring into the abyss about like, oh, my God, I can't believe this basketball game is still going on. But UConn, would we say that they look the best coming out of the first round?
Yeah, I mean, UConn just looked dominant.
Formidable.
I mean, it was It was a tough one. You know, they go 37 for 70 in this game. Stetson lives and dies by the 3-point line. They go 3 for 20. I think the story, you know, coming into this was what I was telling you. I was worried that Jalen Blackman, who had been talked, I just wish they hadn't had to play UConn, but I guess in their situation, that was, they were going to play one of the powerhouses, you know, and he only gets 14 points. It goes 4 for 17, 1 for 9 from the line. He got 9 of them up. I didn't even know if he was going to get 9 of them up the way he shoots. UConn executed and seemed like they were just kind of going about their business, and that's what you want to see. They really had an issue with Klingon in this game, though. UConn was just kind of just throwing it up to the rafters and saying, go get it, Klingon. And he was, the catches were clean every single time. He was unbothered. Tristan Newton was harassing the ball. They just kind of, they did what they needed to do. I mean, what else can you say?
Yeah, they were the most dominant one seed. Houston is in that conversation as well. They dominated Longwood. A lot of people were hoping that Longwood could make some noise. Shout out to the people that were hoping for the phallic conversation. It did not happen. The 12-year-olds out there very upset about this. So Houston, UConn, you could argue which one is most dominant. I think Carolina comes in as far as the one seeds, probably like a tier below those two. And then we have Purdue, and Purdue had a little moment of crisis. And these poor Purdue fans, they go through it. I mean, they really go through the ringer, no pun intended here. But they, every game, especially when it comes to March, just feels like a referendum on the program in general. But things got tight in this game for a spell. And you were reaching out to me and you were asking about things that are tighter than Purdue fans watching this game right now. So I wanted to turn it over to you and just get your thoughts on how you kind of assess the situation for the Boilermakers.
Well, I just wanted to rattle off, you know, I think since they won, I'm assuming they're going to have a good sense of humor about this as much as they can. So, yeah, these are just kind of, this is, I guess, a little bit of a like David Letterman-y kind of a bit here that we're going to try to do. But like, we just want to rattle off, we'll rapid fire. I didn't tell you mine. Mm. You didn't tell me yours. These are the things that we need a theme song for this one time we're doing this. These are the things that are the few things that are tighter than Purdue's fans' asses in that first half. The first one that I'm going to go with is Prince William's Photoshop budget. That's one of the few things tighter than Purdue fans' asses in that first game. That first half.
We're talking about things that are tight. I'm going to say Kentucky's NIL budget, a little tight after the new NIL was thrown out there. So I'll throw that as my first one.
My next one is Kim Basinger's face. That's one of the fewer things as close to its tight as Purdue fans' ass in that first half.
I like that. I'm going to go with Neil Armstrong's cabin space on the way to the moon. I think it was pretty tight in there. So Neil Armstrong, obviously famous Purdue guy. So a little tight for Neil.
Dwight Yoakam's pants in the 90s. That's one of the few things as tight as a Purdue fan's ass in that first half, Tate.
Yeah, I like that. I'm going to say my shoulders editing a Bill Simmons podcast back in the day. Very tight, very stressed.
I'm going to do a cool one. Andre 3000's verse at the end of Pink Matter by Frank Ocean. That's tight, right? That's a different type of tight, I guess. I cheated a little bit there.
No, that's super tight. How about watching NCAA tournament games with your friends, you know, who happen to just be degenerate gamblers out in Las Vegas? That was pretty tight. I had a good time. Shout out to Harry and Sal and the whole crew out there. So I give them some credit. That was a nice, like, cool tight. You know what I mean? We're giving Purdue a little bit of a benefit of the doubt. There you go.
We can wrap up with our cool tight. I don't have any other ones that insult anyone, but glad Purdue pulled it off. There was a point where they hit a pull-up three. It might have been Kaufman Wren that hit it that I was like, oh, they're loose. You know, there was a little bit of a Virginia vibe where you're like, are they going to be able to rise to this occasion? And they did here. Still some ways to go. You know, Purdue did lose to St. Peter's, you know, a couple years ago. So let's keep in mind that they got to keep this looseness go. If they get tied again, we might have to revisit this, Tate. I think it might be, and you guys can send us things that are tighter, that the few things tighter than Purdue fans' asses in that first half. But maybe we'll see this again. Hopefully not, for their sake.
Yeah, let's hope not for Purdue's sake. But I like that game. That was a fun game. We can have some fun with that. We talked about this when we did the selection show. Everybody picked it. It wasn't going to happen. We have three great examples of this. We'll start with New Mexico. Mexico, the Nepo Ballers, everybody was on the Lobos. A lot of people had the Lobos going to the Elite Eight. That's what the Sharps were saying. And Clemson came out in this game as if they had the best bulletin board material around. Early on in this game, PJ Hall hit a three during the race to 10. And I said to myself, oh my God, unfortunately, that might be game for New Mexico.
Is that the earliest, unfortunately, that's game ever?
I think so. That's when I was like, oh God, this is going to go poorly for the Nepo Ballers. So Richard Pitino, we got Rick Pitino in the crowd. We're going to say they're zeros, not heroes, not villains. They're zeros, but not good for New Mexico. Everybody called it. It doesn't happen. What's our takeaway from this team? Jalen House, Jamal Mashburn Jr., Donovan Dent. Did not go how we predicted.
It's a fucking shame. That's the takeaway. I'm sad. Overall, too. I mean, like, I took some swings this year. I was like, I'm not going chalkboard. We're not going chalk talk on this. We're gonna take some swings. I whiffed, Tate. You know, speaking of whiffing and falling down on your face,
most people did.
A lot of people saw this.
Yeah.
TCU, we can maybe get to. That was one of my worst whiffs maybe ever. And I know I wasn't alone in believing in them, but I feel very alone in that right now. Clemson led for, I think the only lead that New Mexico had in this game was at 2-0. And like you said, yeah, I think the moment that he hit that three, it felt like there was an inevitability about this. We've seen variants with, talking about the bad variants with BYU, we've seen variants with Clemson too. We've seen them look really good. PJ can do that. He can look like one of the best players in the country on one night. We just didn't kind of get to see some of our heroes that we wanted something from. It's been a big tournament for cutaways. We had a sad Jameer Nelson tonight. We had a it's sad. Mm-hmm. It didn't happen. So we just didn't quite get the offensive outburst that I think we needed or wanted or expected.
And we always hear about guard play, but it turns out the front court of Shefflin and PJ Hall was just too much for New Mexico at some level. So it happens. The other one was McNeese State. Everybody, ourselves included, we're hoping. I mean, we both, I think, had Gonzaga here in this game, but we were hoping that Will Wade would make some magic happen. He played the Mississippi University for women this year and blew them out. They only scored 23 points. That was a game that a lot of people were pointing to before this matchup as a reason why you might not trust McNeese State. They lose this game. I don't think Will Wade has lost, but so much momentum. But obviously, that was a pick that a lot of people liked there at the 12-5. It does not happen. We miss out on Willie the Kid. We miss out on the Bayou Bandits. And we also missed out on Brandon Brackets, who was scouting Gonzaga before everybody else, but it turns out the scout did not work. Are we pouring one out for Will Wade? Do we think the stock is still high? Did it drop at all? I don't think it really dropped.
That's a huge laugh. Will Wade cannot be killed by any craft that we here possess. He's the cockroach in Wally. There could be like a loading door fall on him, basically, and he's going to get up. He's not fucking leaving. He's impervious. But Gonzaga kind of did the things that they've done well, I think, all year. Like I said, again, I wasn't trying to discredit them with the Kentucky thing, but that, you know, they were really, really productive in the post. They played through the post. They've had a lot of success with that. And McNeese, just the things that they'd relied on weren't efficient at all. You know, their ball screen actions today just weren't super efficient. Shahade, I forget what his total was, but the magic just wasn't quite there. I think Gonzaga saw him coming, Tate. I think this was another bulletin board one where they saw him coming.
And this was an NCAA win, by the way, because when the NCAA needs a coach to speak on behalf of the NCAA basketball community, it used to be Mr. K. It used to be Jay Wright. Now it's Mark Few. So this is Mark Few, who is kind of the mouthpiece for the NCAA basketball mob is probably the best word to describe them. And the face that is trying to be the Robin Hood of college basketball, who is trying to say, we don't need them. Let's feed everybody. Let's let everybody eat, as Will Wade. So it was a nice matchup as far as like the standings in the world of the NCAA. It's one guy who has a show cause penalty. It's one guy who is basically their golden son right now in Mark Few. So that was a fun matchup for those reasons. And the last one we want to talk about as far as the ones that people pick, Samford. Samford was a hot pick. Everybody thought Bucky Ball in the altitude, pressing. Turns out Kansas is a really good passing team. And when you pass the ball really well, presses get broken pretty easily. Typically in the world of basketball, it's how things work. So Kansas was able to break this press. But Bucky Ball, they make a nice run, Bucky McMillan's team, in the second half. And then we had a very controversial foul call that looked like a block upon replay review. They don't actually review it under 2 minutes. So it ends up leading to a Kansas win, but also a bad taste in our mouths. Your thoughts on this and just like kind of the ref backlash and just replay reviews in general.
We saw this when Kansas played Houston at home.
Yes,
when
that's right.
Was still good rolling call. Where, against pressure, when you have size, you can't pass over the top. And we saw a lot of that with McCullough and Dickinson. I know McCullough wasn't in this game. There was a lot of griping and gnashing of teeth about all that stuff with Self. But in this game, I kind of expected this to happen. Even though I got really, really excited, I wrote about how I thought this would be Rick Pitino's favorite team because it would make him feel young again. Watching them just shoot as many transition threes. You know, Graziani, I thought, was going to be a star because I said he defends like one of the road warrior, one of the aerosol huffers from that. But the league got as big as 22 in this game. And then, the Samford just battled back. I'm going to be honest. I had to go back and watch this section of it because I fell asleep. So I went back and watched.
East Coast. You guys get screwed.
This game is still on. And Samford goes all the way and, it's 79-78 with 5 minutes left. And then Kansas kind of pulls back ahead. They made them feel it, man. Samford keeps coming. We knew they would do this. This is kind of what I expected would happen still, because even when when McCullough was announced as out, I was like, people are just going to go a little wild on this. I'm going to zag and take Kansas and they were able to get it done despite that crazy block call, man. That was a heartbreaker.
That was a heartbreaker. And it goes back to like, we review everything. How do we not review this? I don't understand it. Clark Kellogg was very upset when Kenny and Charles were trying to basically say that simple point, which is like, if the rules say we can't review that, then what are even the rules? And then Clark Kellogg is playing devil's advocate. He's like, but I thought you guys said you didn't want more reviews. And it's like, no, we want to review the things that actually have an impact on the final outcome. I think we can all agree on that. But it's a road to nowhere. It's this the circular logic. And at the end of the day, we get Kansas playing Gonzaga, Bill Self versus Mark Few, talking about different sides of the NCAA spectrum. That's another example of that. The bad guy versus the good guy. It's going to be a good game. I wanted to do just some whip arounds and just hit on some things. The Pac-12, let's hit on the Pac-12 quickly. Undefeated so far in this tournament. Colorado has looked great. Obviously, they move on. They beat Florida. That was a crazy ending to that game. KJ Simpson was incredible. Colorado starting five in that game. They're all in double digits. So wanted to give them a shout out in the Pac-12. Also want to shout out the Pac-2. Wazoo gets a big win over Tucker DeVries and Darian DeVries. Tucker DeVries late in that game kind of gives up the ball, can't get open. Washington State was down for the majority of that game, but comes in and finds a way to win that one. And also, if you're the Pac-2, you have made $18 million so far based on the wins of the teams in the tournament. So Wazoo and Oregon State have cashed in $18 million. So they are the ultimate bad guys. Are we impressed with the Pac-12 right now and what we've seen so far in this tournament?
We're all about bags. So I think we are. I mean, that was quite the Drake. There was another one that I missed. I thought Drake was going to go on a little bit of a run there. I even wrote about it in an article that I thought DeVries, the fact that like last year against Miami, the fact that he was, having shots created for him, that he's kind of transitioned into creating for himself and playing with more pace and passing the ball. I thought that would make a big difference. And down the stretch, that didn't end up being the case. So, good for them. Good win. I think we're very proud of them. I think we're very proud of the Pac-12.
Last year, it's the swan song. It's good stuff. Isaac Jones for Washington State, an incredible story, working for a piping company, playing for Wenatchee Community College, JUCO, and then getting pulled up to the ranks. And he was incredible in this game. He was the difference. I mean, him attacking the basket was really putting a lot of pressure on Drake. It ends up leading to Brody fouling out of this game, two rebounds short of the program high, career high in rebounds. I mean, there was a lot of sad news for Drake fans out there, but the DeVries family, obviously a staple here in basketball. So we pour one out for them. We shout out Kyle Smith and Wazoo because that was a big win. Daron Holmes and Dayton, what a comeback. I mean, an incredible comeback. And they were down. Steve Alford looked like he was on his way to getting an NCAA tournament win with Nevada. Maybe there's some even talk about him taking a big job. Who knows? Maybe UCLA. It seems like a place he could fit in. I don't know. But Steve Alford was working his way to those types of conversations. And then all of a sudden, a miracle comeback for Dayton, and Dayton fans are crying. Dayton fans are falling out of their chairs. I mean, it was an emotional experience, and Daron Holmes kind of becomes the face of that. But this felt like their release from 2020. You know what I mean? It felt like Dayton finally got one. A lot of people thought they were a little bit overseeded as a 7 seed, but they get a big win. How do we feel about Dayton's big comeback?
I was they were one of the teams that I tweeted out. I was like, thank God, Dayton, because I took a risk and believed in them as well. And it was looking bad. You know, in the first half, they kind of controlled the game. You know, they were up by 7, you know, in the first half. And then the lead for it swung totally back the other direction. And and Nevada got up big on them, got up 14, got up, 17. And these are the kind of March things you remember for the rest of your life, especially if you're a school like Dayton with where the catalog isn't as, you know, expansive of moments like that. It was quite a win for them there in that last, 7.5 minutes, kind of similar to what Auburn had happen to them, man. So we haven't seen any buzzer beaters, but we've seen some falling apart. We've seen some meltdowns, and, Dayton was on the right side of this one.
Yeah, the right side of history. It's good to be on the right side of history. Talking about the Pac-12, I forgot to mention Jermaine Cousinard, obviously, for Oregon, 40 points in that game. Dante was incredible in that game. Oregon just looked the part. So Lamont Paris would go into the zeros. The heroes would go to Dante and Cousinard. They were both great. Now we get the Dana Altman game. We got Dana Altman's old Creighton bunch going up against Oregon. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Excited for that. As far as some more villains that I wanted to throw out there, junk defenses, I feel like, is the villain of everybody in this tournament. People are just completely disgusted by these junk defenses. Danny Sprinkle threw a 1-3-1 out there for Utah State, gave TCU a bunch of problems, started forcing turnovers. That's what TCU wants to do. So it was kind of like the Spider-Man meme moment of Jamie Dixon saying, wait a second, this is what we want to do. I thought that was a great call by Danny Sprinkle. Obviously, Campy running his zone as well. So junk defenses have been a major villain. Noah Waterman for BYU, I feel like he became a little bit of a villain in this tournament. If you haven't watched him play, but so much, there was a scuffle, kerfuffle, whatever you want to call it, on the ground. And I feel like Waterman was the one that took some of the shade from that. So I feel like he kind of aligned himself into that villain category. Virginia basketball has become a villain of the state, or of all states in the U.S. Everyone has turned on Virginia basketball. Do you have any quick thoughts on that? Like, I mean, how do we feel about Tony Bennett and Virginia? I mean, that was the worst start to the tournament they could possibly imagine.
Oh, man. I mean, it's a segue to another failure of mine with Colorado State. I thought Colorado State had the makeup of a team that could make a little bit of a run. I thought they could beat Texas.
They did against Virginia.
I mean, it sucks for Virginia, and it sucks for some of these teams that were, you know, that were on the outside. We would have much rather seen, you know, Rick Pitino there. You know, there's a lot of frustration with that. That was a tough night for like marketing the college product. I feel like, I wonder how many people watched that game and were like, nah, I'm not doing this year, and just aren't going to come back. But it was brutal. You hate to see it go that way for Reese Beekman and Tony Bennett and Virginia. But that was agony. That was agony.
That was agony for sure. A couple more villains. Turnovers. A lot of turnovers. We watched the Race to 10. All these games with Sal. So many turnovers. And it took like almost down to the 11-minute mark for Northwestern to finally get to the Race to 10. So ridiculous. So turnovers is a big problem. Wisconsin season high in turnovers. That's the reason they pretty much lost to JMU. So something to keep an eye on. Another one, Kate Middleton cutting into the March Madness coverage. She has become a villain of college basketball fans. Us personally, we're good people, so we're sending our thoughts and prayers to Kate Middleton and the royal family. But as Americans, this is the most American time of the year with March Madness, so they were not happy about this news cutting into their game. So she became a villain to college basketball fans. Also, the Long Beach State athletic director, who said that the run for Dan Monson in Long Beach State happened because he fired Dan Monson and he wasn't giving him his health care and all this sort of stuff. Dan Monson was asked about this, and he basically was like, I don't think that's why we went on this run, but okay, if he wants to take credit for that. Very villainous stuff from the Long Beach State AD. So I feel like those are the villains that we had so far through round one. A couple more heroes that we didn't hit. Dane Danger was incredible for Illinois. 21 points in that game, had a big statement. Tom Izzo, race to 69. He gets his win. He's 69 years old. Wins the game 69 to 61. JMU, their Italian cooking class that they did, apparently bonded them. Bobby Crimmins also was in the crowd, so shout out to him. And then one last hero I wanted to throw out, Jay Wright. Kyle, man, your thoughts on Jay Wright? I feel like he's having an on fire tournament right now. So on fire, in fact, they were talking about late night for Jay Wright. This is what Bill Raftery was saying. And then Ian Eagle chimes back in. He said he doesn't need any more beauty sleep. They're just talking about how handsome he is. And he's giving great analysis. He's talking about junk defenses. He's talking about this. He's talking about that. And he's also looking good the whole time. So I feel Jay Wright is the ultimate hero after round one.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a good run here. He was even being frank about, I think what he said about Cal was really on the money too, just talking about how things have changed and if older, more talented players are going to trickle up. I don't know if you can, unless you have just a special freshman class, I don't think you're going to be able to just outright win like that anymore. So I thought that was a really good point. I wanted to give Illinois a little more credit too. That was a game I thought Morehead hung around with him. And, you know, talking about the legit check thing, I thought Illinois kind of cemented themselves as somebody to keep an eye on, because, you know, we talked about, the difference between, the last couple years, why did they flame out? I just think Damask in that game really paced them. He had a great game and it didn't feel like he was like, it allowed Shannon to be Shannon. Like we've talked about, Shannon's speed was crazy. And in that game and his scoring, I had the thought, I was just like, man, if Illinois figures out that Dane Danger is like the unstoppable mismatch in this game's going to be just decidedly over. And they did. And that was that. I really am going to be keeping an eye on Illinois in this region, because they look good and balanced to me, I thought.
And they got a nice draw. So they get Duquesne in that second round. They should be able, we would suspect, just based on the two teams and who they are, they should be able to handle business there. But shout out to the A-10. They've looked great so far in this tournament. So that's a nice draw for Illinois. I thought Iowa State looked great as well in that first game. Mm-hmm. Their fans were, so loud and obnoxious pulling for Drake against Washington State that you can only imagine what it's going to be like there in Omaha when it's them pulling for their own team against Washington State. That's going to be we talked about UConn having their home court advantage. I mean, Iowa State is going to have a home court advantage against Wazoo. So that's going to be a very fascinating matchup. Looking at the South region, we haven't talked about NC State. Ben Middlebrooks, as much as we love DJ Burns on this show, Ben Middlebrooks was the real star in that Texas Tech game. And now, I mean, NC State has Oakland and Greg Campy and our guy Jack Golkey to get to the Sweet 16. So Kevin Keats right now is a winner. He's got a nice path that's right there in front of him. Colorado Marquette's going to be a great matchup. That's going to be a fun game. Marquette is a team that Tyler Kolek hit two big threes early in that game to kind of settle things down and set the tone that he's going to be there.
Well, Marquette's better without him, Tate. You said so.
I liked him. I thought they were fun. I had fun with Kolek too, though. But, I just am a Cam Jones guy. I have an affinity for our guy Cam Jones. So I wanted to give Marquette some love. They had a little bit of a tussle there with Western Kentucky. Got down for a good bit, but they fought back. So that was good news for Marquette fans. A&M, by the way, Nebraska A&M, that was a great game, high-scoring game. Wade Taylor was incredible in this game and giving some Kimba Canada vibes. I mean, Texas, we talked about the SEC. Texas A&M was the good side of the SEC. Utah State was the good side of the Mountain West. So, like, the narratives have already been formed, but we've seen certain teams step up to the plate. San Diego State as well with Jaden Ledee. What are your thoughts on Texas A&M?
Cal can't complain anymore about them having lucky games against Kentucky, because he did imply that, or he maybe just outright said it. Wade Taylor, you said it. I mean, he has that vibe of somebody that's like, get on my shoulders. The whole team just seems like they are just pulsating confidence right now. And he's fearless, man. And we knew he was a big shot taker. Him and Cuisinart, man, those were the two guys, like, in terms of just creators that I was like really, really, impressed with in the first round. This is a physical Texas A&M team. They're going to be a tough out, man. They have a lot of confidence. It's interesting that, like, winning creates momentum. I heard a coach say that recently, and it's funny how it didn't create any momentum for Auburn, but for Texas A&M, they went the other way. And I think people are going to really, really need to take them seriously. So,
yeah, it's going to be a fun matchup, A&M versus Houston. That's something to watch out for. Texas and Colorado State, we didn't talk about, but Texas, that was a very low-scoring, ugly game. Texas survives. Good news for Rodney Terry, who obviously had a nice run to the Elite Eight last year, and that's the reason he got hired. So good for Texas fans to see him get another win. They play Tennessee, the Rick Barnes game. that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Rick Barnes in Tennessee, they look great in that first game. Zakai Ziegler plays his brother, who was on St. Peter's. That was a nice little shout out to the Ziegler brothers. I had them down as heroes as well. So that was good to see. I think we've talked through all these matchups. I just wanted to make sure we at least hit every team so they feel like we gave them their due. But it's a lot to get through. We have, you know, now 32 teams left in the NCAA tournament. So we are slowly chomping away. Kyle, man, any more, any last thoughts, anything else lingering on your mind before we let you finally go to sleep late on the East Coast right now? I know it's past 2 o'clock, so we got to let you go.
It is late. I guess the last thing that I think needs to be talked about, I think I'm most excited about James Madison versus Duke, and I think I am also very, very excited to watch Carolina versus Michigan State, Tate. I think we gotta dip the oil stick here and get a sense for how well is your confidence engine running right now. Are you nervous? Are you how you feeling about this? Because you thought Mississippi State was going to get put out or was going to put them out. How you feel about Tom Izzo sitting there?
Well, I just feel like, what does the NCAA want? They want Tom Izzo to win, so that's always scary. And if you look at the line itself, it's 3.5 moving the other direction. So it does feel like the sharps are like, that line's a little bit insane, but I think the line's that way for a reason. It's going to be a tough game. Armando Bacot's going to be very important in this game. And if Armando no-shows, and if Elliott Cadeau struggles like he did in the first game, it could be a major problem for them. And it's a really tough matchup. And this is what Tom Izzo lives for, right? I mean, he lives for these types of games against a Carolina, against a Duke, against a Kentucky, where he can kind of, you know, he gets another little badge of honor. So I think Izzo is something to be worried about, especially like a late stage Izzo who's making some comments that people are raising their eyebrows at. You know, I put him in the heroes column, but when he's talking about, you know, the Greg Sankey stuff about putting in more Power 5 teams, that sounds a little villainous. So I'm interested to see what happens, you know, in this game in particular. When Hogard hit some threes early, I was thinking to myself, oh no, this Michigan State team, they might be for real. So that's going to be a tough matchup. And then Duke going against the Dukes is going to be a fascinating game, because I thought Duke looked really good against Vermont. At the end, they closed it really well. They had some stretches where there were some lapses early, but it was a nice closing game. Good win for John Shire. So I think both those second round games for the Tobacco Road teams and NC State as well with Oakland, Greg Campy, I think it'll be good stuff. So I have no prediction for Michigan State. I just know it's going to be a close game. And there is some bad blood right in the tournament between Michigan State and North Carolina just because of, you know, 2009. I mean, there's multiple instances of these two teams meeting up. So I know it'll be a good game. So we'll have fun watching.
Yeah, I'm excited to watch it. I could see that one going either way. So I agree with you about Bacot. But I always love when the games overlap in the first round. I love the kind of, like, you know, your eyes are darting around, you're trying to keep up with it. But it is more fun as we can kind of keep up, as we can focus a little bit more, and the matchups are just like one after the other. I feel like that's like the most exciting. That's the most exciting time of the year.
I feel like my head is spinning. If you're listening to the show, I'm sure yours is too, but it's the best time of the year. We appreciate everybody tuning into One Shining Podcast. We will be back at the end of the second round on Sunday night. We will break down everything that happened over the weekend. Enjoy the game. Stay at home. Hunker down. Have a great time and enjoy the next round of the NCAA tournament. We appreciate you guys. And again, we will see you on Sunday night. Thanks again to our friends at FanDuel. Must be 21 or older and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, North Carolina, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, Vermont, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 533-42 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.